Hi, thanks for joining us. This is That's What She Said, and my name is Tara Lawson. I am joined with my co-host,
Claire Joseph Meyer.
Today we are going to be talking about abortion and all that goes with that. And this comes from a conversation that I had with a student. We were meeting, so you know, this was pre-COVID because we were meeting for a meal. And he said that he thought abortion, those who got abortions were selfish. And I was taken aback by that. I get it. I do. I do understand in theory why he had that position. And he explained as much. He explained why he had it, saying that because you did this act and all of a sudden you think, oh, wait, I can't, you know, my bad, my mistake. And then, you know, deciding to terminate as opposed to just going ahead with this mistake and even considering like what could potentially be a child, you know, because at that point is not, and that's debated, obviously, but what would potentially be a child and calling it a mistake. And so that was his contention. And I was the only cis female there. And so my position was, well, no one here can state the same characteristics, physical characteristics as I can. So coming from this position, no male or those without uteruses should be able to dictate and put into policy that which happens to a person's body. And then that pretty much ended the conversation. But wanting to like really discuss it and then its ramifications for not just like, what does that say about our society, or that a percentage of the population thinks that it's selfish for a woman to get an abortion and completely dismissing reasons why, and just seeing it as being kind of this vanity that happens, like, oops, my bad, you know, let's erase it, as though someone who chooses an abortion takes it that, you know, everyone takes it that lightly, because it's a very invasive procedure, regardless of the reasons. Like, it's not something that happens that you'll ever forget. And so to think of it as selfish in a way that, oh, that's capricious and kind of a choice that one doesn't have to consider, you know, that it has a weightlessness to it. It's just like, oh, you know, getting a tan, it's no big deal. Getting that mole removed.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when we first spoke about this, Taralyn, just the discomfort of when abortion comes up in a conversation in an unanticipated context, right? Because this is one of those issues that is so deeply divisive in the United States. And when I was looking at the Pew Research polling around this for 2019, numbers in terms of percentages of Americans polled in support of legal and safe access to abortion services is as high as it's been in 20 years, which is 61%. So 61% is not a huge margin of majority. So we know that among people that we would be talking with about this issue, there's going to be a high chance that people have strong feelings and different stances. And this comment that you're mentioning in particular feels like a difficult way to enter the conversation, right? It doesn't really set up a lot of space on the field because it makes some very particular assumptions about the circumstances under which someone might be facing a decision to interrupt their pregnancy. When, of course, in terms of how many different contexts a person might find themselves in, debating on whether or not the right choice is to move forward with a pregnancy is much more than, oops, I made a mistake while having sex. I don't even think that's a particularly prominent reason that somebody would seek out interruption of a pregnancy. Birth control is extremely widespread at this point, and unintended and undesired pregnancies occur within marriages, they occur outside of marriages, they occur with girls, they occur with adults, they occur, I mean, so it's just, it's very difficult. And when I am trying to hold space to talk with people around this, what I find is that everybody tends to feel, I guess I shouldn't say everybody, most people that I encounter tend to have a strong emotional stance around abortion that gets triggered right away when we try to talk about it, right? I mean, it's kind of like right away, regardless of where you stand on the policy issue and on legal access, just the conversation is so loaded that it's like, what even is the way, right? What even is the way to try to talk about it because it's so important, right? I mean, there's a number of important rights issues involved. And so it feels important that we should talk about it. But what are the contexts? How do we do that? Does this make sense?
It does. Yeah. It does. And even as you're talking, I'm thinking, I don't remember how it even came up.
Yeah.
It was out of the blue in a sense. I don't know if maybe there was a backhanded comment about just existing. I don't even know.
Yeah.
How does one enter a conversation about abortion? Like,
I don't know.
I just can't tell you. I really don't remember. All I remember is that the conversation happened and then those who were there were kind of silent.
Yeah.
Whatever they believed, they didn't feel the need to express it because he was either expressing it for them or it was just such a volatile topic that they didn't want to interject anything, feeling that it was already too high heat.
Too hot to touch. Well, and that's, I mean, in my work with students, the only time that abortion has come up is in the context of somebody who felt very passionately about their pro-life stance and their work around that in terms of advocacy and other things, for whom that was like their dark secret from everybody else because they knew that was a very unpopular stance on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And just the level, I mean, I felt a lot of sadness around that, of sort of that there's this part of your life about which you clearly feel very passionate and have a lot of strong feelings about and you put a lot of your time into that has become this secret from some of the people that you're closest to or living with because you're afraid of how that will change their perception of you and that the relationship will be irrevocably damaged.
Right? That is, I mean, that is something to consider. And we think about that it anyway, right? It's like, I don't want to diminish your view of me because I feel passionately about this. And we're just speaking about abortion because this can be any facet of our lives, right? Yeah. Where we're holding on to this. But I want to pivot a little bit from a biblical standpoint, right? The scripture that's used is Jeremiah. It comes from Jeremiah 1:5, doing the New International Version. It's, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." And people think, well, if God can know us before we're born, then what does that mean when we terminate? And that's, to me, is the foundation on which the pro-life stands, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And on one end, I'm not necessarily going to argue for pro-life or against it. I'm just like putting it out there. On one end, it makes sense, right? That you want all life to be valued. No circumstance should deter that because the mindset is, well, God is greater than any circumstance. However that child comes into this life, through whatever, however conceived, you think, well, that child. And what it does, though, it completely dismisses the experience, though. Like, you're choosing that unborn life over the experience that brought them and the trauma that the individual may be experiencing. So you're dismissing one person for one that's yet to be born. And it's like, but God would do that. It's like, but we're not God.
You're not.
I'm not.
I am.
I didn't know.
I know.
I've just been so misplaced. My affections, my adoration and worship has been going in a completely different direction. But yeah, it's just, we're not God. And so it's clearly God saying to Jeremiah, I knew you, right? And it's not his mom saying, I knew you before you were formed, Jeremiah. And therefore, I knew that you were going to be this great individual. And so that then changes the focus. Like, it's not okay, because God knows then every child. It's like, no, God knows us. Mm-hmm. And that's the knowing. And that's the pro-life aspect of it. And not so much the being born aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting. But then I want to make this point to go back to what you're saying about having to hide this. Yeah, it's in safe spaces, I guess. And I guess being campus ministers, I know we had mm-hmm. talked about this too. Maybe having some kind of pact that said to where we will honor the person's words and respect the person who's saying them, regardless of if we agree.
Right. I mean, that's the hope for transformative dialogue, right? The reason that we engage one another is that we only have our own experience and our own lived realities and what we have heard about an issue. And so certainly I hope when I'm speaking with students or otherwise that that is understood as a mutual experience. And I am no longer in college, but it doesn't mean that I'm not also a work in progress.
True,
but I
true.
Remember college as this time where I took like philosophy classes like Just War and biomedical ethics, and my brain was on fire with all of these questions that, like, coming out of your, for many college students, out of your home of origin, you're young, it's the first time you've really had to face questions like this, and often you're not fully prepared mm-hmm. for the level of complexity and how philosophers have had a lot of time to, like,
right?
turn people on their heads, right, and be like, I gotcha. And I think about this place that many people I know who articulate what they would describe as a pro-life stance, coming from this place of it's that the fundamental issue is the life of the unborn child. Mm-hmm. And there's a piece of that I always want to say, I want to honor the impulse to name that as a life, right? To name a zygote particularly as a life, because I think many people who are or have been pregnant start to feel a sense of relationship. Not everybody, right? But when you think about someone who suffers a miscarriage or a pregnancy loss, their experience is often having lost a child. Mm-hmm. And so wanting to be really respectful of the fact that as humans, we seem pretty wired to bond early and to bond immediately and to begin to project forward to that future baby that we hope that we will have. So when that pregnancy is interrupted, not by our own choice, it can be incredibly tragic, and the grief that accompanies that is very real. And so I think that sometimes people who articulate a pro-life stance are more sensitive to that reality than sometimes I've heard from the pro-choice side, which in the sense that part of the pushing back on the argument made by pro-life folks is that that's not a life, right? That it's too early to call that a life. That's not a baby yet. It's a zygote. And I think unintentionally some of the impact of that is to invalidate the experience of women who've experienced non-chosen miscarriage, right? So there's that piece that I think I want to say I can understand why that stance would feel natural mm-hmm. and why that would make intuitive sense that that's a life. My concern about pro-life advocacy and marketing is not the right word, but I just think about it because there's a billboard on my drive home that I always see that talks about heartbeat at 16 days or whatever, and then pictures this like clearly like at least a few weeks to a month old baby, right? That you're like, well, that's not 16 days in gestation. That's like this whole setup is not not the way I would have done it, I guess. but wanting to say that my concern about the pro-life stance is that it takes this frame and holds it like nobody's business against the complexities of other frames, right? That it's sort of like this is – my fear is not that individual people who hold pro-life stances are disingenuous in any way, mm-hmm. but that at the end of the day, the forces and the energies that seek to cut off access to safe and legal services for women are more nefarious than protecting the life of the unborn. And I don't think that that often makes it into the conversation in ways that end up being helpful, mm-hmm. right? It's like, how do we seek to create the space to expand awareness about the multiple layers of why we feel so strong emotionally about this issue?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. And I think some of it is control, right? Mm-hmm. Because we had talked about that some of it is about seeking to control a portion of the population by saying
the uterus bearing portion.
Yeah. by saying this is what will be, and since there's a law, you can't say anything about it, mm-hmm. you know, and shut up and go home. And if that is the case, if it's not so much about my safety, if it's not about reasons why, if it's not even if the pro-life debate is just a mask so that you can control me and control the population in a sense, then that comes from a different place. You know, it doesn't come from a genuine place of concern for this zygote or the life of this unborn. It's about you controlling current circumstances, and seeking to control current circumstances, it means to control me. Mm-hmm. And if I get in the way of that, meaning I get to choose when and how I become pregnant or have a child, then that's the problem, I guess, you know, because the more I get to say what happens to me and my body, then the more equity exists, then the less control you have. Mm-hmm. And then that's scary for people. Right. And we were talking about how there's a link between the control of a person's body and then this face mask issue, right? Like it may seem a bit tenuous, like how they jump from abortion to face masks. Like, I don't see that connection. And the connection is control.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those moments where I think part of the connection we were drawing is this, what would you say? Desire to create a bridge for empathy, right? Of notice your indignation when something that is so, it's external of your body, it's an article of clothing that you can take on and off, it's for the protection of others. I mean, it's the most, to me, I don't understand how we've politicized in the United States wearing a face mask, right? I mean, it's so, at the end of the day, such a small sacrifice, and it's for the health and safety of everyone around you, right? To just notice that for a person who feels deep, potent indignation about having been like violated somehow by this order, executive order, however it's come down to them, to imagine like, could you understand then how in a much more egregious violation of someone's agency mm-hmm. and right to make decisions about what is literally their body, not something they put on and take off their body, yeah, right? But like, literally my bodily process, that not everybody is subject to the possibility that this could happen to them, mm-hmm. right? It takes two to make a pregnancy, but really only one is going to suffer the direct bodily impact of that pregnancy. And yeah, I wish that there were ways that we could see one another in this conversation and say, I hear your concern and I'm not going to invalidate what you're sharing with me. I also ask that you listen to what I am saying about this, right? Is that it's just, I mean, when we had talked about this earlier, the intersection of the encroachment on reproductive rights and its connections at, you know, on various levels to white supremacy in the United States, to eugenics, to all these other issues, that all of these dynamics are at play. And again, I guess I just want to say, I don't believe that people who are, by and large, people who are pro-life are like masking these evil, malicious pieces and just saying, I care about babies. I think that most people are sincere when they say, to my knowledge, I'm fighting for this because I care about the life of the unborn. And unfortunately, the issue represented is not that simple and not that innocent. And that there's all of these dynamics that lead to, even though it's not a huge majority, the majority of Americans saying this should be a safe, legal right for people who could become pregnant.
To take a more, I guess, polarized view.
Do it. Polarize us.
Okay, so the notion of the life of the child. Uh-huh. So it goes back to power, right? Yeah. It goes in the white supremacy vein. What if the whole push for stop murdering the babies, right? Mm-hmm. Stop interrupting pregnancies is because the population, the quote unquote majority, is seeing its numbers dwindle mm-hmm. and seeing the numbers of those who are quote unquote minority increase. And you're looking, this is why we are becoming a minority, because we keep interrupting these pregnancies. So it's less about, again, polarizing, sure, but it's less about the life of this zygote or potential child and more about the power dynamic shifting, where it's not, well, those were uteruses, and power dynamic with those without uteruses, but the power dynamic is those who are labeled white versus those who are labeled not. And you can, and even if you had to pinpoint a point in our culture or a practice in our culture rather that is contributing to this loss of power, number wise, of course, it's contraception. Of course, it's interruption pregnancies. Because if you didn't interrupt the pregnancies, we'd have more. We'd have more people who look like us.
we really just need baby factories.
You know, so stop it. It's selfish of you to decrease our population, you know?
Well, and that's the piece, right? That I think, you know, if for folks listening to this podcast, that would be really hard, the frame that you're articulating, really hard to understand without understanding that broader context, right? Like what is, in terms of reproductive rights and the battle for reproductive rights for women, mm-hmm. What does that have to do with race? What does that have to do, right? I mean, I think mm-hmm. a lot of people would, there are many people who would be like, I don't understand the connection, right? And that's why it's like, that's why these conversations are important. And we can't go into that fully here on this podcast, but invite you to do the research, right? Invite you to have the conversation.
Please, please, definitely.
And I, part of what I was thinking of too, when you were saying that, Tara-Lynn, is this life is sacred, which we see come out of, I mean, so many religious traditions, right? That life is sacred.
True.
The way that that has been taken hold of in the United States, I do think is worth mentioning for a variety of reasons. One is that we're in the middle of a national conversation right now about whose lives are sacred, right? Whose lives matter?
Whose lives matter?
Can we get some
matter?
Clarity yeah, about this? Yeah. Which you were, I mean, that was the bridge from what you were saying to me is you know, are we clear that this is what's going on? But two, when I was thinking about this earlier, this, the stance around denying women the moral agency to make decisions about their pregnancies and whether to continue them feels in some ways like there's also correspondence with how we handle death with dignity in the United States mm. and our insistence that at the other end of life, because life is sacred, people really shouldn't be allowed to make decisions about ending their lives either, right? Whether it's due to their experience of choosing to end their life on their own terms in the midst of great suffering or with a terminal diagnosis. And I, just thinking about the ways that this is not denying women the right and denying people with uteruses the right to terminate pregnancies tends to go hand in hand with a lot of consternation about people's right to make decisions at the other end of life as well. Mm-hmm. And just trying to think about what is it that we need in our country to support better conversation about humans moral agency, because when we talk about life being sacred, usually at the front of that, at least in popular American Christianity, is human life, right? Like not cows, because there are hamburgers.
Well, no.
You know,
they don't count unless it's a canine or a feline.
Sure.
Typically,
on a 1-to-1, like case by case.
Right.
But like generally when we say life is sacred with air quotes, we mean human life, right?
Typically. Yes.
Typically. And part of that just, I mean, it makes me think like why human life, right? So the Imago Dei, the fact that we have these Holy Scripture origin stories about being made in the image of God. And part of that is that we have been gifted with this capacity to make moral decisions, mm-hmm. right? Or depending on your angle, we stole that by eating the apple. Either way, right? but that we have moved into the necessity of making communal decisions about what is ethical, mm-hmm. what is moral, how do we make decisions with and for each other. And part of what, for me, when I think about my emotional activation around this issue that has felt so abrasive to me, is this staunch insistence that when it, again, comes to one's own bodily reality, right, and an impact that impacts me squarely, myself, in a similar but not same way as if I'm at the end of life with a great deal of pain or a chronic illness or a terminal illness and I want to go in my way now, right?
Mm-hmm. My own terms,
My own terms. In both those decisions, that is such a deeply personal, right, decision about my own body that I am being told I should not have the right mm-hmm. to offer my moral reflection on that, I should not be allowed to participate in the decision about my own physical lived reality. And I understand that a response to that would be, but it's not just your life when you're pregnant, right? And that's where we come back into this circle, mm-hmm. right? The circular reasoning. And that's where we get back into the conversation that we keep pointing to about, you know, quote unquote, unborn life. Is that a life? Is it not? There's a big debate about that. But I guess the student that I mentioned earlier who was pro-life, and I think intuited probably by my general existence that I might not be. I mean, it was
maybe
not, certainly not something we had talked about before, but it felt in the conversation that this person was assuming that I did not agree.
Of course.
Right. Came up in the context of my saying that I really wanted to support taking a group of students to Salem, to our legislative capital, to try to find a time to help them get used to the process of being an active and engaged citizen and advocating for issues that were important to them. And so that was in the context in which the student was sharing, right? Like, well, what's important to me is private because I don't want to put myself at risk in relationship by sharing that with someone. And part of what I wanted to say is I do try to be consistent about if I'm going to advocate for moral agency and people's right to engage in that. Like, here's a good opportunity to model what that means to me and to say, like, I would literally drive you to Salem to advocate for pro-life, right? Like, I would be happy to chat about whatever you wanted on the hours right there and whatever you want on the hours right back, right? Like, I will not, unfortunately, be able to join you to advocate for that, but I would get you there. And I would support helping you connect to how to use the legislative system to have your voice heard, because that's what I'm committed to, right? That's my value. It's not that you should have to agree with me. And I think that most people who are going to fight hard for access to abortion services are not going to say, like, in doing this, I agree with every decision every person is going to make related to abortion, right? You waive that right. What you are advocating for is that it's not your choice to make, right? If I'm going to go out on a limb and say I will fight tooth and nail to make sure that people have access to this in safe, legal, accessible ways because I believe that they should have the right to make that choice for their own bodies, that means that I'm not going to police those choices. That means that I'm not going to assume that everybody has to pass my test of what I imagine I might decide in their situations, which I'm not in, right? I mean, I think that is morally ambiguous and really inaccessible for many people, right? Mm-hmm. Is to say, like, how could you let go of that level of control, right? I guess that does come back to the control. Like, why would you entrust people, I mean, to make decisions that you might not quote unquote approve of from your
yeah, great points, all of them. But my response to how do you let go? Well, God gives us choices. This is my theology, because not everyone agrees, obviously. God gives us parameters. And within those parameters, we make these choices. Mm-hmm. And even if we go outside of the parameters, that doesn't mean that that's what God wants, right? But God allows us that choice. And so when I look at certain legislation, it's, are we taking a choice away from an individual that God doesn't even do? Mm-hmm. And then as a Christian, what is the main issue that this is pointing toward? And for abortion, it's not so much that if you're pro-life and the legislation goes your way, that people are still not going to be getting abortions. That's not even the case. Like, you can history has shown, you can say abortions are illegal. People are going to still get them. And so what we see is that legislation doesn't prevent people from doing anything, really. But since we're talking about abortion, you know, it's not going to prevent people from seeking out the interruption of a pregnancy. And so what then becomes the issue is a public health issue. How can we then say, but we value you and we don't want you to die? We may not agree with your decision, but we're still saying that we want you to be safe, and that this legislation actually not only jeopardizes your safety, but it jeopardizes our community. If not only we have a physical death on our hands because this went horribly wrong, but now we have this breach in community because this person now feels isolated mm-hmm. and is unwilling or feels unable to address the trauma, if they do survive it, that may come about because of this decision.
Well, right. Yeah, I think there's definitely a harm reduction argument to be made for pro-choice, right, for safe and legal access. And I guess, like, at the end of the day, not that I'm ending this podcast, but at the end of the day, here we go. I'm winding it down.
You can wind it down. It's time. Go ahead. Go ahead.
As I will, speaking from my own journey of discernment around this issue, the more layers I allowed to be present, the more morally ambiguous the issue became, the more I felt strongly about safe and legal access. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a clear seduction to keeping it morally simplistic. Mm-hmm. But life just tends not to be. It just tends not to be. And the more we allow ourselves to at least receive testimony and to receive research and to receive data and to receive engagement, I think that often needs to then be accompanied by some empathy and some like, how do I walk with you through how scary it is to let go of the control, to let go of the moralistic simplicity, to let go of things that the world, I'm like, in the areas in my life where I'm morally simplistic, I would say, like, that feels better. It feels better. Like, I feel right. I feel anchored. I feel oriented. I feel confident. I'm like, yes, God and I are on this. We agree. Right?
I'm chosen.
I'm right there. I get it. Right? We all want to be right. We want to be good. We want to, right? So I think that as a campus minister, part of what I want to offer the students that we're working with is, I can imagine coming into college, you have so much pressure, so much to prove, and this is the time to, like, if you didn't already have it right when you got here, to get it right while you're here, right? And to, like, leave college as, like, I know all the things, right, yeah, that I need to know. And to be like, oh, I don't want to let you down, but I'm, you know, however many years, 10, 15 years out from college, and it goes way downhill. Your confidence about being right about things? Kiss.
Wait,
that.
Is this the note we're ending on?
This is the note we're ending on. Is to
it
say,
gets worse. It doesn't get it better.
Right? But I think the note that I'm trying to end on, it's not working, is to say, to encourage humility, right? To
okay.
encourage the stance of being able to receive and not to persuade. To encourage the fact that in that gray area where you start to feel really disoriented and disturbed mm-hmm. with yourself, not to rush back, right? Don't rush back for the black and white, even though it feels so good to be there.
Really?
Because at the end of the day, I think it was M. Scott Peck who was saying something about, like, the best decision makers are the ones who are willing to suffer the most for their decision, mm-hmm. but at the end retain the ability to make it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I think abortion is one of those where, like, if you did not suffer for the stance that you ultimately take, go back and do it again.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. We can end on that note. I think that's a strong note to end on. It took us a while, but we got there. Well, this has been That's What She Said with Terrilyn Lawson.
And Claire Joseph Meyer.
As we stated before, we like to end with some new music, or at least a not very well-known artist. And so this week, we're going to highlight Sunwo Love. He comes out of Pasadena, California. And this song of his, it's not really a song because he's a rapper, but this song of his is called King Solomon. Thank you for joining us.
I think I can, so I know I will. He said your faith has made you whole, and I know I'm here. See, we say healthy, wealthy, and wise, gifted in a prize. Blessed to be a blessing, a millionaire in disguise. So you a baller, pop your collar then. See, we building up the temple for my Lord. Brick by brick like King Solomon. For the wiles of the devil, there's no tolerance. If you ain't with us, you against us, bro. All right, then holler then. If you don't know, you better ask Jesus. I ask Jesus, what do I have? I have received. I mean, I try to cling to the cabbage and cream, but even the creativity is just the craft of my king. I mean, he captured my dreams, held the things high. shots, just trying to make it to the stage. First I gotta hit the mosh pit. The ransom was random, so please, yo, be cautious. Okay. Y'all can have the fame, but Lord knows I need his promises. Can't keep up like we dating Ray and Simone. You see the women we end up spending our money with. Smart, classy, and pretty. It's still the show with a sudden fit. Glory to God, my vision set on the mountain tip. Took me to the top to show me I ain't no counterfeit. Wow, now I'm dancing like Davy. I acting like it's hard. This is just a job for Katie. Be a beacon for the world to see what's up, Mavis. I wasn't the right type, but my God, he done changed. Bring the sun to where it don't shine. Peace to Sarah Palin. Mom's asking why Alaska for vacations. I'm like, I'm cold-blooded with some Russia in my veins. Plus, I heard the view from here was simply amazing. Yard court, go hard with them keys like Mozart. Finding it loose and no alcohol, I'm just juicing with the fruit of the spirit. Why even entertain losing? Got me slicing and dicing, kindness and love confusing. When they lying and hating, just watch them tripping, some music. See, my God is amazing, I'm chasing them more than rubies. Stay away from them groupies, catch a curse like it's cooties. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the head. With the mind of Christ, the devil get upset. Check. To hate wisdom is to love death. So don't start talking out your bag. Be careful who you correct. Check. Simple game leads to purchase pain. Yeah. Playing a role of Cain with intent to make it rain. Wag. Trust in the Lord and stop playing the fence. The righteous are like a fountain. The blessing will have you drenched. Temple for my Lord, like King Solomon. I'd rather have Jesus than the gold from every continent.